your tears on my pillow that won't dry on the road beyond my ears. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step.
Let's all get settled in and have a meeting. What do you guys think? Good? All right. So three drunk guys get into a cab, and the driver can see how drunk they are, so he just starts the car and then shuts it off and says, "All right, we've arrived at our destination." First drunk says, "Thank you." The second drunk hands him some money, and the third drunk smacks the driver. And the driver thinks that he caught on to what he did, and so he says, "What's that all about?" And the drunk says, "Watch your speed next time. You could have killed us all." That being said, welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name's Zach. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. I ask you to please turn off all devices that make noise and might or will distract others. We're going to take this time to get reconnected to God and let the craziness of the day kind of drift away. And, if everyone's in their seats and comfortable, ready, let's start the meditation. Lead us in the fog light prayer now. If you don't know and you'd like to join along, it's up here on a slide to my left, or you can just repeat after me. God, Let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Steve S. to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this in this group because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have a spiritual experience, and the authors of the book and we as well think it's kind of important that we know what one is. So,
recovered alcoholic, my name is Steve. Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he doesn't close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There's a principle which is bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer. It's AA, page 567.
All right. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down during the meeting. This is a tech-free meeting, so please just set your phones to airplane meeting mode or just turn them off. So it's my honor to introduce our speaker tonight and for the next 12 weeks, Marion W. I really admire Marion because not only, you know, she doesn't just talk about recovery, she lives recovery, and I've seen her walking the walk, and she helps a lot of women, and you know, I don't want to stand up here and try and tell her story for her, so without further ado, let's hear what she has to say.
Thank you. My name is Mary and I'm a recovered alcoholic. What an honor and a privilege it is to stand up here tonight. It always just blows me away, the power of God in our lives and the transformations that can happen, and that God would God would see fit to have me be anywhere today, you know? I want to welcome anyone who's new to the Rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hope you find a home like I've found here. This is my home group, Alcoholics and God. Yay, Fort Lauderdale. And this is my tribe. I use that word a lot. You might hear me say that. I just want to thank the group for having me up here. I always pull Mike aside and go, really? Me? And he's like, yeah, or whatever, you know. And it's just so sweet. You know, what I do know is when we get home groups and we find our tribe, it doesn't mean we're all the same. And we all, you know, some have one strength and some have another. And I certainly couldn't do what Mike does. And I certainly couldn't do what Zach does. But I do what I do. And I can tell you that my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous and my journey through life has been being okay in my skin. And it'll be my message as long as I live. I feel like it's something that God has really instilled in me to not only teach this book and not only to help put someone's hand in God's hands, but just to be you. You know, be authentically who you are and bring your gifts to God. And because I so much of my life was struggling to be somebody else always, you know, and never feeling enough. And what I know about that today, about not feeling enough, is that's reverse pride. You know, I'm saying I know better than God. Even if I question Mike and go, why do you want me to do this? You know, it's like, no, I'm questioning God. If God's appointed me to do something, then that means there's something that's going to come out of my mouth that maybe it's just for me to stay sober. Hey, guess what? That's what Dr. Bob and Bill talked about at the beginning. If we're going to keep this thing, if we're going to stay sober, we better get busy. And so my life has been busy. And I get accused of being busy a lot. And that's okay. When I say that prayer of being, you know, of maximum service to God and to his fellows, that happens literally and figuratively or whatever. And that can be in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that can be in my job, and that can be taking my grocery cart and putting it back where it belongs after I'm done shopping. And it can be all those things. I want to be an example of what this book has given me, what this life has given me, what this transformation has given me everywhere I go. And, you know, one of my great heroes that was in Alcoholics Anonymous was this man named Steve Nobles. And he was about 6 foot, I don't know, 1,000. He was so tall. And he was a therapist at the one and only treatment center I went to. And he was the kindest, gentlest man. He would lead our groups, and he was huge. He was like a bear. And he always did it barefoot. He took his shoes off, and he had this gentle, sweet, sweet spirit. And I remember so much about this man. He died of this disease, and some of this stuff happens, but I remember having a conversation with him. And his wife saying, you know, we don't have a TV at home, and they never read the news. He said, because it broke their hearts. He said, I felt like God put me on this earth to love people, just to love people. And I keep busy enough doing that, and that stuff breaks my heart. And I just think of that I know that that's what God's done in me. And I'm not perfect at that. I can judge and I can point fingers, and usually it can come right back to me. And I don't do that perfectly, but when I live by the things that God has put on my heart and for me to be, it's to love God with my whole heart, soul, mind, and strength, to love others as I love myself, you know, and that's what I try to live by today. You know, today's going to be some first step stuff. It's going to be, I was thinking about this. I got a little bit of time by the swimming pool today. And I was thinking about this, like a first step being, you know, like somebody could write a book, and maybe they already have, of, you know, you're an alcoholic when, you know, when I think like this, when I act like this, when I do this, when I feel this. And I had this experience last night where, you know, Peter and I have we're moving to another place where we're going to be working. And with that old place, they were gracious and gave us a car. And, you know, we had to turn the car back in, and then we had to get another car. And so we haven't exactly got the world's best credit, I'll just put it that way, and things like that, you know, but so we get this car and I'd been praying about it. You guys, I've been laid up with, my ears are plugged. I've had a double ear infection, and I've spent a lot of time with God in this last week. I mean, I'm about ready to join the convent. Me and God have been together, you know, and it suddenly comes out of my mouth. That's me. Well, guess what? I'm still human no matter how much time we spend with God. But what was so crazy about this is that, so we get this beautiful car, and I was like, yeah, I really feel like this is God, you know, and it's 4 years old, and it's, you know, it's pretty classy, and it's beautiful, and it's like, yeah, it's God, this is cool. And last night we went to a meeting, and Peter had spoken, and we go out to dinner afterwards, and he's like, well, do you want to drive it home? Because I was just thrilled watching him drive it, and how cool he looks in it, and it's like, okay, I'll drive it home, you know? And so I get in it, and I'm driving up 95, and this car has like the same handle. There's the turn signal, and like right next to it is the cruise control. And I kept hitting the cruise control, and I'm driving down the freeway, and I could feel it. I'm putting on the gas and trying to pass this car, and I feel it putting the brakes on. And I'm like, I'm not going to say nothing, man. I'm not saying nothing, you know. And then I go to do this again, and then it does it again. And I'm like, in 0 to 2.3 seconds, I'm not kidding you, my mind says to me, like a good alcoholic, oh my God, we bought a piece of crap. I thought this was God. He's good. We got a lemon, and I'm in trouble, and I better tell him. This had all gone through my mind. And I'm telling you, it was 10 seconds. It was no time at all that this had happened. And it had progressed from, oh my gosh, I don't know what this is, to, you know, literally we're going to be suing people, and we're going to be in court over this thing, you know? And I just happened to mention to him what was going on. And he's like, I go, I feel like it just kind of decelerated. And he goes, oh, what do you mean? And then again, another couple of seconds later, I go, yeah, it kind of just, oh, he goes, I've hit that. That's the cruise control. And I was like, oh my God, thank you, God. But it was so crazy because I had this whole thing made up in my head like this, you know? And like Chuck C talks about, we have a perception problem. We think, you know, if you walk by me and you don't say hi, she hates my guts and she must be talking about me or whatever, or, you know, just these things that the way that we look at the world, the way that we look at life, you know, that I'm not worthy of being up here and really of being up here. Really? Who am I trying to impress? A bunch of alcoholics that are just like me, you know? So you get the story of the turn signal, and you get the story of I'm not good enough, and you guys get all that stuff. Or that I'm, you know, hey. And then if they don't ask me to do it, then it's like, hey, well, you know, I've been sober 28 years, and that's my home group. And after all, I'm the long-term woman sober here, so they should be asking me. You know, it's just crazy, these things that, and ideas, these things that happen, you know, in our mind and in our head, and untreated alcoholism. And talking to a dear friend just the other day is like, well, I'm crazy, you know, sometimes. And I try to sponsor that way. Not crazy, but I try to... But they hear my craziness. They hear it. You know, because I need to be authentic, and I need to be real, and I need to know that I never, ever, ever will rise above my alcoholism. There's such a thing, guys, of healthy fear. And the healthy fear is this. That disease that is like the boy whistling in the dark, that is behind me chasing my tail and wanting me to just be full of fear. Don't tell him about the car. Just hold that in. You know, when your butt's completely falling off and you got sponsees calling and I'm showing up like, oh, super sponsor. Well, you know, da, 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 da. And I'm dying inside. Most of the time, and my sponsees can attest to it, the ones that are in this room right now, have you ever heard me freak out on the phone? You know, have you ever heard my stuff? You have. And so So just even like being here and doing this, you know, I'm going through a whole nother process of going through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not only what we do line on line on Monday nights here, we do Joe and Charlie. And I've been through the book many times in my life, and I'm getting to experience that with Michael, with my sponsor's permission to go through the book with Michael the way that it's done here in this group, and being able to experience that again, you know, and know that I don't know why I said that just now. I don't know where that was going, but just knowing that, I guess where I'm going to take it to is I don't rise above my alcoholism, and my big book needs to meet me where I am today. My big book needs to meet me where I am today. And I need to be, full of God. I need to render my inventory to someone. And when it's not my sponsor, it's a shoulder to shoulder. And Peter is one of my shoulder to shoulders, you know, a lot of times. And in my alcoholism, in my personal alcoholism, when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I didn't say my sobriety date, is November 11th, 1989. When I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I hit a spiritual and emotional bottom that, you guys, I don't know that, I never even considered the word suicide. That wasn't in my vocabulary, but I had so much self-hatred and I hated who I was. And, you know, I was reading through the book with one of my sponsees yesterday, and we're reading, you know, 61, 62, and 63, and it's talking about, you know, we're the actor and we're selfish and self-centered and all those things. And that's me untreated, you know. And when I came in the rooms and I knew, because I knew I was crazy. Like, I just thought, I'm the girl that gets locked up and gets in the straitjacket and we're just going to put her away for life, you know? That's who I thought I was. And when I could find myself in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, when I could read those pages and find out that's where I was, you mean there's a solution? What? There's a solution for someone like me? It was home to me. And I can literally tell you that in 28 years of sobriety, I've grown up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned to tie my shoes sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Literally, like from the ground up, you guys taught me to be a mother who shows up and not just tells them to get their own cereal in the morning. Although they're in their late 30s now, they're older than some of you guys here. But still, I do that with them. They still sit on my lap. They do. I think that's cool. You guys might not think that's cool, but I think that's cool. But the people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, they not only took me through the book, they taught me how to live, and they taught me how to live honest and to forgive and how to not be prideful and how to not be egotistical and how to not be afraid, and just these basic living skills that we get here. And if you're brand new today and you can relate to any of that, then maybe welcome home. Maybe welcome home to you. One second. So my journey started in Bellingham, Washington, and I was born and raised there. I had 7 kids in my family. There were 6 original, and then we adopted a little boy. And when we were poor, man, and we didn't have food on the table. And my mom was raised in Alaska, and my dad was a fisherman and a taxi driver, anything he could be to provide for our family. And there was alcoholism, and there was a lot of outbursts in the home, and there was a lot of anger, and there was whiskey glasses against the wall, and there was things like that that happened a lot. And when my mom and dad would break out in their fights, they would send me downstairs to break up the fight, because I would sing and I would dance and I was a good kid, and I knew how to get my dad to calm down, and I knew how to make mom happy. And I really learned early on how to play God. I mean, I don't know about you, but that's how it was for me. I could control a circumstance by just walking into it with my mom and dad, you know? And And so growing up all those years, it's like that. And, you know, at 18 years old, I meet an angry, drunk alcoholic, and it's at a party, and I look across the room, and it was love at first sight. And I just, you know, and what I know today when I look back at that is I met my father. I met my father at that house that night. He was in a fight. He was angry, and I found a guy I could fix. And, you know, I ended up pregnant, and we had three children very fast together. You know, they were 1, 2, 3 in a row. And I was partying and I was drinking. But what I was doing is giving them some of the things that I didn't have. You know, so I thought I was kind of doing an okay job. You know, when I was a little girl, my teacher would wash my face when I went to school. When I was a little girl, my teacher would comb my hair when I went to school. You know, I would make my own peanut butter sandwich when I walked in the door, you know, in the morning to go to school. You know, that's how I was raised. And so I was doing a little better. You know, I think that generationally that we do a little better than our parents, or we get to have it a little better for some reason. I don't know why that happens. And so I'm busy raising these kids. I'm doing a little bit better, but I am still the drunk housewife. So I'm just leading to you. This is kind of a get to know you for people that have never heard my story and breaking the ice. And plus, I'm kind of freaking out a little bit. So anyway, there, chop wood, carry water. So I'm raising these three little kids and I'm the drunk housewife and my husband's off working and I get pregnant with a fourth child. And these are the things that brought me into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Actually 2 weeks from, no, 11 days from today. Yeah. January 22nd, 1987, I had a child that had died a crib death at my sister's house. His name was Brian. And January 22nd will be the 30th anniversary of that. And it was a there's just no words for that. There's no coping skills for that. You know, the absolute innocence of that, the absolute never losing anybody you've ever known in your whole life, the absolute shocking, when, you know, sudden infant death, it's sudden, you know, it's sudden. And here I am raising these three little kids and my child dies, my fourth child dies. And, you know, my daughter was 4. My daughter Jessica was 4. Jake was 5 and Brandon was 6. And so during that time in my life, I'm left to take care of these kids. I'm full of grief. My husband's full of grief. My kids are processing their stuff. And that same year in August, my mom died. And she was a heavy smoker and she was diagnosed with emphysema. I was drunk, didn't know all the, you know, I didn't know what was going on because I was in a fog and I was crazy and filled with this grief. From the death of my mom in August of 1987 to November 11th, 1989, I could not get enough alcohol and other forms of alcohol in my body to kill the pain that was going on inside of me. I could not kill it. And one of the things I knew in my life was I thought that I was just flat out going crazy. You know, and I decided that I was going to go see a shrink. And I went to see this woman, and her name was Heidi Sunni. And you know, Bill talks about, you know, on the ominous warning. And if I try to say any more than that, I'll butcher it. But, you know, the ominous warning. And this woman sat across from me, and it was an ominous warning in my life. And she sat there and she told me, Marianne, when you lose a child, you lose your future. And when you lose a parent, you lose your past. And you're having trouble living in today. And to me, those words remind me of us. It reminds me of us. And I kept drinking and I kept, you know, doing what I was doing. My kids, I'd sent them off to a Baptist church and they got on a Sunday school bus and they, uh, And I would send him on Sundays from 9 to 1, you know, which is good for an alcoholic mom if you're like me, you know. I got somebody to take care of the kids on Sunday morning, you know. And I love those kids, guys. I love those children so, so, so much. And through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and through good sponsorship, what I found out is there were some words I had to take into my life, and that was that I loved and I cherished my children and I abused them and I neglected them. Now, when we can, and I'm not talking the form of the word, abuse them, throwing them against the wall. And if that was the case, I'd admit it, because my sponsor walked that walk. And thank God for that beautiful woman, Polly. Oh, yeah, by the way, she's in Jacksonville, and she's on step two in a step series on Thursday night. She's like, talk to her today. She's like, I get to stay one step ahead of you, honey. That's how she talks. You know, oh boy, where was I at? Where was I at? That was a sidebar. Where was I? Yeah, loved, cherished, abused, neglected my children. And I'm just saying, you know, hungover mom, not getting them up for school, you know, all those things, the harsh words, you know, all that stuff. I had to accept that because I could, in my heart, I could never, when I was able to put that together, I could accept that. Because I knew in my heart I did. And, you know, I work with mothers a lot these days. And so we know this disease. We have no control. We have no power. It centers in our mind, right? So as a mom, I would have thrown myself in front of a train for those kids. In my alcoholism, I would have thrown myself in front of a train for them. But I couldn't get sober for them. I had no power. I had no power. And so I'm sending him off to this little Sunday school, and this preacher man comes over to my house, and he opens up this whole invitation to a relationship with a God of my understanding, the carpenter. And that day, that's October 11th, 1988. And so what I would do is so crazy as I'm searching this God and I'm living this life of seeking God, and I would sit home with my box of wine and my other goods that went along with that. And I would read that Bible and I would highlight those pages. And I was like, God, you're good. And whoosh. And, you know, and I'm like, yeah, this is good. And like our big book talks about, man, it's like the next day, the hideous four horsemen. You know, and I'd be full of that shame and full of that guilt and full of that regret. And I'd go run into that little Baptist church and I'd go run into that preacher. And it's like, what's wrong with me? I can't get sober. I can't get sober. Let me pray with you. Let's pray. And he'd pray with me and I'd go home. And, you know, our book talks about that over and over again, you know, swearing off with or without a solemn oath. And every time I wanted to quit, I meant it with my whole heart. And I used to do this stuff where I would call people, like whoever I partied with the night before and I got out of hand or whatever. I'd call them the next day and go, guess what, guys? I quit drinking. I'm really sorry I was a jerk last night, but aren't you excited? I'm quitting drinking. And it's like, yeah, you know, I remember. Just like being so excited that I quit drinking. And by, you know, and how our book talks about it, it's like that not being able to bring that to mind by 4 o'clock that day, I'm thirsty. And I'd forgotten everything that happened the night before or the people that I told I was going to quit drinking. And there the game's on again. And I'm doing it over and I'm doing it over and I'm doing it over and over and over again. And, you know, in the rooms of AA, we talk about nothing worse than having a belly full of booze and a head full of AA. You know, try having a heart full of God and a belly full of booze and no AA yet at that point, you know? So that's where my life was. My little sister happened to come into the program about a year before I did. I remember I was telling a sponsee this yesterday. I was laying out in the backyard and she was reading her big book. And she had it open to the pages we were actually reading yesterday about the alcoholic being like the actor who's trying to direct the show. And I'm reading that page. And I'm like, how do these guys know who I am? Like, who, what is this, Alcoholics and all? How do they know who I am? Because that was the deal in my life, you know, right? I'm directing my mom's life. I'm directing my dad's life. I'm directing all my brothers and sisters. I mean, my little sister, after all, drank wine in the morning and ate pills. My big sister was smoking weed like no tomorrow. My brother was living under a bridge and shooting heroin. I mean, they got the problem. I'm looking good here. I got a car in the driveway. You know, but it was the stuff that was going on inside of me, right? It was all that stuff that was going on inside of me. And so, I go out to party on my 30th birthday, November 10th, 1989. And I got this nice big old, 80s afro going on. And I got myself a brand new leopard print shirt, and I'm going to go stay alive that night, you know? And it's going to happen. This is my birthday, and it's going to be good. But that same morning, the 7 o'clock that morning, it was like, hey, girlfriend calls, let's go have drinks. Let's go to Denny's. We went to Denny's at 7 o'clock in the morning and drank Bloody Marys that day and went home and passed out and got my leopard shirt on and went out that same night. And so I go out that night and, I do not remember getting drunk. I remember putting so much and consuming so much alcohol in my body, but I have no, like, I feel like I never caught a buzz. And I've heard people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous say that too, where you literally like drink yourself sober. And that happened to me that night. And so I got up the next morning, November 11th. We talk about the different ways that we get God. And that morning, I know that I received the gift of desperation that morning. That little brother that had lived under a bridge had been in numerous treatment centers, in and out of jail, and all this crazy stuff in his life. You know, every time I was pointing the finger at him, you know, because he'd come over and he'd steal a stereo out of a car and he'd come over to my house and have me try to buy it from him. And it's like, Eric, you got a problem, buddy. You really have a problem. Well, one of these days, you'll take a good, long, hard look in the mirror, Marianne. Ominous warning, November 11th, 1989, bright pink bathroom with the afro, kind of matted, looked kind of Bob Marley by then, you know. It's kind of crazy looking. And I looked myself in the eye and I looked myself in the mirror and I saw something I'd never seen before. And our big book talks about we're at the jumping off place. I couldn't see my life with a drink or without a drink. And, you know, our Southern friend talks about this, and we just finished the big book study. And I believe this is something I believe in my life. And he says one brilliant line in there that the voice of God, when we hear the voice of God, it's like a thought with a voice. And the thought came to me. I'd had this neighbor that had gone to treatment at St. Joe's Treatment Center 6 months before that, and he was a cokehead, and he got clean. And something... this thought enters my mind. Okay, we have thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of alcoholic thoughts a day. And all of a sudden, this thought goes through. Have you ever guys noticed that in your life? Help that guy across the street, you know? Put the grocery cart back. You know, things like that, right? And the thought comes to me, you need to go to treatment. So my husband at that time had heard so many times of, you know, our book practices, you know, the methods that we try, swearing off with or without a solemn oath, taking a trip, not taking a trip, sanitariums, you know, all the things of methods that we try, you know, and he'd heard it all. And I told him I'm going to go to treatment. And he says, well, just, you know, there's a little of that green stuff up in the drawer upstairs. If you want to smoke a little of that, there's some beer in the fridge. Calm down. Here we go again, you know. And apparently I called my big sister and invited her over to come and get me and take me to treatment. And it was a scary step, right? I got three little kids at home. I certainly, you know, what am I doing taking off to do this, guys? But I knew that I knew that I knew. And I went to that treatment center and they put me in detox. It's my third day in detox. And I decided that I'd overreacted. I'm feeling good. Thank you so much. This was really comfortable. And and it's not like I had to pack any bags, guys. I went in there in a hoodie, my husband's boxer shorts, and my Bob Marley hair, man. I had nothing, you know, and people call and do intakes, you know, Nicole takes intakes all the time. There was none of that going on. I just showed up, you know, and in the midst of that too, guys, when I walked in the treatment center the first day, they do your intake and they're asking you all these questions and I'm like just thinking that I got to get off those other substances. Like I'm not even thinking I'm an alcoholic. I was in complete denial about that. Have you ever had a blackout? Well, yeah, hasn't everybody? Hasn't everybody hit the same car twice? I mean, doesn't everybody come to in a Lazy Boy easy chair in your coat and your shoes? And I mean, doesn't everybody do that? Oh yeah, yeah, that's me, you know? But I was diagnosed late second stage chronic alcoholic. Guess what? The only thing next to that is chronic alcoholic. That's how far down I'd come, you know? And so to mention that wonderful person, Steve Nobles, again, you know, in your journey of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's going to be a lot of angels in your life. There's going to be a lot of people that say the right thing at the right time. And man, they're your heroes. God can take us broken, messed up, screwed up people and give us this, my girls hear this a lot, give us this superpower to save lives. And it's not because we went to school and we got a degree and we earned it. No, it's because we screwed up our life long enough that we can actually, something in this language of the heart, something in this place we can't explain. And sometimes it can happen at your first meeting that we walk in and we can belong at, you know, that I heard something that made me feel at home. And so I'm laying there in this bed and I'm overreacted. I'm ready to say goodbye. And this big, tall man comes walking in and this beautiful nurse named Becky Treat. And they sat at the end of the bed. My favorite picture in all in Alcoholics Anonymous. In the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous everywhere, the man in the bed has a girl in the bed. And they spoke my language, and their words had depth and weight. And it was a language I could understand. And I said, me too. Me too. And from that day, I've been home free ever since, guys. Home free ever since. Everything goes back to finding myself in those pages and meeting it. You know, reading through with a girl today, and I actually have this new sponsee I just took on, and it's so crazy, Courtney. Like, the last time I did this 12-step series, I was on every week. I mean, I did a first step with a girl this morning, and I'm speaking on first step tonight. You know, God just sets it up that I'm going to be doing it live and speaking about it live. And so that's beautiful to me. And, you know, from that moment, I've never had to take a drink. From that moment. Because how I always explain this is for me, what happened in that, I had a God of my understanding. But God brought me you. God brought me God with skin on. And, you know, I love the Southern friend, man. I do. In the original version that we just read the other day. And there's a long paragraph, and I'll probably read it during this series because it just really hit my heart. But it talks about being able to hear the birds sing and being able to see the trees. And, you know, Pat R. talked about that, about how Marty Mann had that experience. And, you know, I was in treatment and we walked over to Cornwall Park. We walked across the street every morning and we'd go swinging on the swings and acting like kids, and it's November. And November in Bellingham, Washington is beautiful. And there's greens, and there's reds, and there's oranges. And I was like, man, do you see how beautiful this is? Huge, high evergreen trees. If you ever get a chance to go to Washington, that's where I'm from. The evergreen state, man. And it was so beautiful. and I could see the world through different eyes than I'd ever seen it before. And I know we don't do the 12 steps in treatment. That's not what treatment's about. But most treatment centers do some kind of manufactured list thing, you know, that I remember in my first step, I had to add up how much money I spent on drugs, alcohol, and everything. Like how much? $100,000. I don't have whatever it was, you know. And so I did step one there, and I did step two there, and I did step three there, and which afforded me to go out to an outside meeting. And, you know, a lot of and you'll hear old timers talk about this a lot, you know, those God coincidences, the things, the God shots, the things that started showing up in my life. And I knew one other person that was sober, this guy that worked with my husband, his wife was sober, and I stayed as far away from her as I could, you know. And they said, okay, well, you've got, you know, you've worked your third step, so you can go out to a meeting tonight, and it's Friday night, and I'm like, yeah, I'm getting out, you know, this is cool. And but we've got you a temporary sponsor, and she's coming to pick you up, and here was Dawn Yonkins coming to pick me up. Dawn, why? Just so happens to be the one picking me up that day. Just so happens. And we went to a meeting. And what I'm trying to explain to you is our mind and that our disease, you know, I have an allergy to alcohol. When it goes in my body, I can't stop. Okay? But when I'm abstinent that long, my body doesn't need any alcohol anymore. Okay? So I go to a meeting with her, and it's this place called Dry Docks, and the floor is like this, and there's billowing smoke in the room, and there's clanking radiators and trains going by, and a bunch of old crusty people smoking in the room, and it's Friday night, and here in this place where I'm like the lowest piece of crap, here's the alcoholism, you know, I'm like, I'm so much cooler than this. I'm so much better than this. This is great. This is where my life has ended up on Friday night. I'm with a bunch of old farts on a Friday night at Dry Dock. How cool is this? Great. My life is over. And one more time that night, my disease was trying to take me out, and my disease was trying to obsess, and that place needed to be shut down by something. And Pat said this last week, and I'd never heard it this way. You know, I don't just need a power greater than myself. I need a power that's greater than booze. You know, think of that too. I mean, it was a power greater than me for a long, long time in my life. I got to shut down this pain. I got to shut down this fear. I got to shut down this I'm not enough. I got to shut down all this stuff because I'm just inadequate, whatever. It doesn't matter, or else I gotta amp it up. You know, let's get this party started. You know, whatever it is, I have the disease of alcoholism. So I walk into this Dry Dock, which Peter's been to that meeting. He loves that meeting, and it's awesome now. And I walk into this meeting, and there's this Native American woman sitting against the wall. And I'll never forget it as long as I live. I don't know. I don't even know that I ever said him again. You know, this is another angel in my life, but she sat against the wall and she told my story. It felt like my story. It felt like my story. And it's like, man, I belong. I belong. And that might not be a big deal to you, but it's a big deal to me. So you have a disease that's lonely. It wants to separate me. It's going to separate me first, and then it's going to get me drinking, and it's going to get me dead. And that doesn't stop at 28 years. That doesn't stop. It still is after me. So I need to make sure that I'm current in my big book. I got to make sure that I stay busy. I got to make sure that I'm busy in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, my first commitment ended up being at the Northwest Group of Alcoholics Anonymous that I shared for 20 years with my little brother and my little sister. You know, my little sister, there's crazy Vegas odds. Bet on this, guys, okay? I have 7 siblings, 7 of us all together. I count as one of them, okay? And my little sister has 29 years sober. I have 28. My brother Eric has 27. My sister Marlene has 26. My brother John, I think he's like a 5 or 6. He might be, you know, might be teetering on the stuff again. I think he may be. But even between just the four of us, that's over 100 years sobriety in our family. And if you're holding on to some hope that God can do some work, I believe for me that when my mom went to heaven, you know, I wasn't there for her. I was in my disease. And you'll hear about that stuff as we move on. But I believe when people pass, they get to make some prayers. And we just came in one after the other. You know, my older sister doesn't, she does church, and she takes care of little kids in Awanas, and that's her sobriety. And my sister Joanne and my brother Eric and I, we found our place, our tribe, in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I served at Northwest Group in lots of ways, and we were a clubhouse, kind of like, you know, bottom line or 12-step house, and you know, but there's a lot of love in those rooms. And I sat at the back, like Sam Shoemaker says, and, you know, and welcome the newcomer, and sat down and had a lot of meetings before the meetings with a cup of coffee, and lots of meetings after the meetings, and going to Denny's and having pie. You know, I remember my first Friday night, oh, we're going to go have pie. And I'm like, do you want to come have pie? It's like, it's Friday night and you're going to have pie? Losers, you know. I remember calling my husband and saying, you know, they want me to go have pie. And he's like, go have pie. You know? And that sponsor, that temporary sponsor, her little boy was 6 years old and he had a butter knife and he's under the table trying to cut the legs off. And it ended up being hilarious and funny, and you laugh sober for the first time. And you pass a phone number for the first time. And you learn to trust somebody and share your life with somebody for the first time. I don't have to hide anymore behind my disease. I don't have to hide anymore behind these feelings of not rightness that we have. I just made up a word, not rightness. So we're going to journey through the steps. I know that's kind of an icebreaker of what our journey will be. I don't know what it's going to be like. I have no idea. But what I'm going to do is try to just get out of the way and let God do whatever he wants to do in and through us. And it's an honor and a privilege to get to do this. And I love you. See so many amazing faces and people that I really love. And if you are here and you're hurting and you don't feel like you're a part of, please, please, please reach out your hand to someone. Because you don't have to be alone ever again. Thanks so much. I love you, Boo.
That was amazing. Can we get another round of applause for her? Very powerful. Thank you. Now it's time for our secretary's report.
Hi guys, my name is Jeff and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seven tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Ryan to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what exactly it means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, I'm Ryan, I'm a recovered alcoholic. Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
''1940s big book style sponsorship from Forbes, second edition Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? That's a lot. And is there anyone tonight that needs a sponsor? If you could raise your hand, stand up. Want to stand up for us? If you come up front at the end, we'll get some guys with you and get you back to God. All right. And if you'd like, join us on Monday nights with our Big Book study where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30 and the Big Book study starts at 7:15. We have CDs, mugs, large print big books, the little red book, and big book dictionaries for sale in the back as well. I think we have announcements. What we got? Acts of Recovery. I don't have glasses on right now, so I'm like legally blind. What does that say? Can you read the dates for me, Zach?
January 13, 2018, noon to 5 p.m.
Bam, flyers in the back. Okay, A's Got Talent. Robert, is Robert here tonight? He's not here. Okay, we also have flyers for that in the back. That is, oh no, okay. Waves of Serenity. 62nd Florida State Convention. We got a date? August 15th. Boom. Okay, and that's it. See you next week.
All right. So we have tonight's session, all the past speaker podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org, including Step Series Marion has done for us before, which was awesome. So go ahead and go online and give that a listen. I would like to invite everyone also to our Monday night Big Book study, which is in this building on the third floor Monday nights. Come early for pizza, soda, coffee, and to fellowship with us. And whoever would like to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center row. Quick reminder before we close out, there is a 75 no smoking, no vape zone in front of the door. So if you're going to smoke or vape after the meeting, wait till you get to your car or the smoking area over there. We got Boy Scouts in the building tonight, so let's be a good example for them. All right, let's have a little moment of silence and close with the Lord's Prayer. Who can bring us from shame to grace? Godspeed.
These possessions that I have amount to nothing. Ha This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine.
Just to know that we are setting up eight tables like this, but without the extra two. Eight tables, not ten, but eight tables. Two and two, that's eight. It's a good thing I'm pretty, huh?
Let it shine, 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 let it shine.